Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
All right, I think we're ready here. It's Sunday, May 25th, 2008. That makes this Solder Smoke 84. I guess I'll start out with a little bit of Rome travelogue. I occasionally get emails from listeners who say, yeah, they like kind of the a little bit of that. And something interesting happened a couple weeks ago. It's the kind of thing you do in Rome, and then after you do it, you think, wow, that was kind of different. My wife was going over to visit a rose garden right across the river from us. We're very close to the Tiber, and we went across the Tiber into the more historic area of Rome. And the rose garden happened to be right next to Circus Maximus. Circus Maximus is the big, really big kind of theatrical area that the ancient Romans used. This is where, just picture Charlton Heston, Ben-Hur, chariot races and all that. They used to also, apparently, it's big enough so that they would flood it and stage mock naval battles in there. Anyway, it's now, I think the seats and all have long since gone, but it's almost big enough now that it's a terrain feature. And if you didn't know what it was, you'd just find yourself walking across this thing saying, what's this strange big open area with steep inclines on both sides while you're in Circus Maximus? And when my wife finished up with the Rose Garden, we were heading back to the car, and Billy and I remembered that we had one of our little model airplane gliders in the car. So we looked at the big steep inclines and the big open area. We couldn't resist. And so out came the glider. And so Billy and I were flying a glider across Circus Maximus. And just the juxtaposition of all that ancient history and chariots and the ancient Romans and the our little glider flying across, well, it just seems somehow appealing. Enough travelogue. Back to technical stuff here. I have my note page here on things that I've spotted over the last few weeks on the internet and projects that I've been working on and things that we've been talking about. First of all, let me talk about the new Solder Smoke blog. I've been having a lot of fun with this thing, and it's made my my internet life a lot easier. You'll recall that Mike and I started kind of a couple of news pages, because when we talked about stuff on Solder Smoke and mentioned great websites or bits of software or things that you needed to download, of course we would neglect to tell people where they could find these these wonderful things. So we started with a couple of different websites. I had one and Mike had one, where we would post the actual the URLs and things like that for things that we'd mentioned. And of course, we were real bad about actually doing that and updating it, partly because it was a little bit cumbersome here. But now I've moved into the modern era, and I have started a blog. And from the perspective of the guy who's doing the blog, a blog's really easy to do, and so it's really easy for me to update, and makes it more likely that I'll actually do it. And I've been trying to put little contributions to the blog up just about every day or every other day, and it's actually been fun. There's all kinds of things that you could do with a blog that you could do with a regular web page, but it's a lot easier with the blog. And also, I like the blog because it's open to comment from others, so it's very interactive, and anybody who wants to jump in and leave a comment and discuss something, it's a good way to have discussions within the Solder Smoke community. I have added a few features. We have now, if you go to the blog, and I'll tell you where it is, it's http://soldersmoke, that's one word, .blogspot.com. Soldersmoke.blogspot, B-L-O-G-S-P-O-T, again, one word, .com. That's soldersmoke.blogspot.com. That'll take you to the blog. You'll find all kinds of fun stuff there, I think. And it's the kind of thing where you can improve it every day. I have a slideshow running with a lot of the QRP and homebrew-related pictures that were on my computer, and now they're there, and they're flipping through, and there's pictures of, well, there's a picture of Farhan, there's a picture of me and Wes, there's a picture of homebrew projects from days gone by, there's the logo of the GQRP Club, the front cover of EMRFD, all the stuff that's important to us. It's there, and I think you guys will enjoy the slideshow. Also, because this is a very open, participatory thing. If anybody has pictures that they'd like included in the slideshow, send them to me, and I'll, if appropriate, we'll put them in there, and it could be fun. So send them along, and we'll put your QRP and homebrew related pictures into the section of the blog that we call Yuck 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 Solder Slides. Also have the cluster map so we can see where people are reading from, and we've got a lot of readers now in Brazil, because I mentioned a really cool homebrew rig from Brazil. More on that later. And we're also seeing a lot of readers in Chile, Argentina, South Korea, Nigeria, and Zimbabwe. So hello to all the readers out there, and glad to see those red dots on the cluster map. We have links to Mike's sites, mine, and there's now a Solder Smoke YouTube video channel that you might want to check out. There's a link to that there. A lot of the videos that we did are listed there, and makes it easier to access them. We have the Gadgeteer Bookshop is up there. Please, if you're going to buy something from Amazon, buy it through Gadgeteer Books. It's a cost-free and painless way to support your Solder Smoke podcast. If you buy something from Amazon and you do it through my Gadgeteer Bookstore, ka-ching, I think I get about 15 cents or so. We have videos up there, a collection of all the Dilbert Knack videos, for those of you who may still need help with a diagnosis, although if you're listening to this, odds are you've got it. And then the archives. So yeah, please check out the blog. And the thing about the blog, and you guys are going to have to make a technological leap here. Some of you are already there. Some of you are early adopters. Some of you are, well, not quite in the vanguard of internet technology. I know I'm not. You got to figure out a way to subscribe to the blog. A lot of you are subscribed to the podcast, so you automatically get the podcast downloaded into your MP3s players. But one of the beauties of the blog is that you can subscribe to the blog, and every time I put an update on it, you get a message. And there's lots of ways of doing this. And the way I did it was I use the Firefox instead of Microsoft Internet Explorer. I use the Firefox browser, and on the Firefox browser, up in the URL line, where you see soldersmoke.blogspot.com, off to the right, there's a little orange symbol, and if you click on that, it'll ask you how you want to subscribe to the Solder Smoke blog. And I opted to have it placed on my personalized Google page. So it's really, really kind of cool, because now on my personalized Google page, you know, I'll have one little block for the New York Times, one little block for the weather, one little block for the Washington Post, and one little block for Solder Smoke News. It makes it seem a whole lot more important than it, let's face it, than it really is. But anyway, please check out the blog, subscribe to it, comment, throw your comments in there, get discussions going, and use the Gadgeteer book page. Oh, yeah, and the ads are in there, too. I really think the ads add something, because most of the time it turns out that we're advertising for kit manufacturers and people who are very much a part of what we do in the solder smoke. And sometimes now they have little arrows up there, so if you click on the arrows, you get to see more of the ads. And I don't click on them myself, because that's against the rules. But if you guys might want to check it out, and just check out those little kind of arrow icons in the ad area. All right, enough of that. Back to the radios. One of the things I noticed on the QRPL list, and I got a bit of a chuckle about this, is that, you know, while other folks worry about, you know, product standards and variations and you know, and lead in different items and all this kind of stuff, the big thing that was of concern to us was possible variations in the permeability of type 43 ferrite material. It was a really interesting discussion on QRPL, I guess a week or so ago. And it is important, because, you know, you get that type 43 ferrite, and, well, you're assuming that the permeability is going to be pretty standard. But I think we've discovered that there may be some variations there. And I thought that discussion was interesting. I guess we're in assorted technical news here. I think, you know, I posted a message up on the LT Spice Yahoo group. There's a LT Spice Yahoo group. Great bunch of guys. Most of them are far more advanced in their uses in the use of spice than I am. So my questions must seem really kind of infantile. I posted a question about how to model bifiller and trifiller toroidal transformers. I know how to make a regular transformer in LT Spice, but I'm not quite sure that I'm doing it the right way for the bifiller and trifiller. And I got some answers, but I think most of them were probably over my head. I think I've figured it out, and I'll describe it here. And if any of you spice wizards hear this, and could you send me an email and let me know whether I'm on the right track? You know, you pretty much do it just the way you would draw it on a piece of paper. When you have the three coils there, the trick is to make sure that you get the phasing right. And so if it's trifiller, you have, you know, they're wrapped around, all three wires are wrapped around the standard 8 turns per inch. And you have three going in one side of the toroid and three going out the other. And when you draw them on LT Spice, just make sure you put the phasing dots together so that you don't mix up the Gesinnte and the Gesauta. I guess is the best way I could put it. I think those of you who have who've done this in LT Spice, I hope will understand what I'm saying here. And let me know if you think I'm on the right track. Let's see what else. Oh yeah, my the calibration of my W7ZOI W7PUA meter. This was an adventure. It was discussed on the blog, but I'll mention it here. This Mike and I were involved in the construction of this power meter that allows for the measurement of really low levels of RF power. Very, very useful device. I built mine a while back, and then, well, I moved from London to Rome, and everything got disrupted. Now I'm I'm at the point where I'm going to use it again, and I start making some readings on some homebrew gear that I'm making, and something's not quite right. And well, I knew it wasn't the design, of course. I knew the immediate suspicion is the builder of the device, actually the calibrator of the device. And I made some really kind of dumb mistakes when coming up with the calibration chart, because what you have to do is a little calibration graph that correlates the reading on the milliamp meter on the front with actual power levels. And I had done my calibration back there in London, and had used a little kind of RF probe circuit described in the ZOI PUA article, but like a dummy, I had forgot or I hadn't focused on the fact that the RF probe circuit that they had there was peak reading and not RMS. So when I drew up my chart, the calibration signals that I used, I basically used peak readings when I should have been using RMS. And well, that will mess you up, and it will mess up your calibration. So I corrected for that last week, and then I went ahead and just to check it, I took my trusty Heathkit HW8 and used the peak reading RF probe to determine that the power out was just at 1 watt, and then I switched over to the ZOI PUA power meter, and my chart and the meter and everything was right on the money. So everything was right with the universe, and I'm now able to measure power down into the negative 25 dB range, negative 25 dBm, all that kind of good stuff. So it's great. It's very appropriate, because that's usually where the output of all my devices are, outputs are. Sometimes intentionally, sometimes not. But anyway, thanks again to Wes and to Bob for the great circuit, the great device, and also thanks to my friend Thomas up there in Norway who volunteered to send me the logarithmic chip that's at the heart of the whole device. A couple other things here. In the course of putting the blog together, I put up links, Solder Smoke links. And, of course, Mike's website and Mike's links are up there. And I in the course of posting them, I went back and visited them. And it's just such a tremendous resource. All the projects that Mike was working on. And then, especially, if you go to his website, you can... And get to his link pages. He has a really fine collection of links that are of use to us. And so I recommend that you check it out. Perhaps when you go to the Blogspot site, just go over to the right and you'll see Mike's KL7R website. Check it out. A lot of times you get to guys' links pages and you think, well, not much there. Mike's are very carefully selected. And very good. Let's see what else. Just sort of odds and end news here. Michael AA1TJ a week or so back was talking about he was reading. He found a copy of the history of American QRP, and he was reading from it. It sounded like a really interesting book, and so I figured, well, great, I'll go out onto Amazon and find one, and I was hoping to find, you know, most of the times you find books and there are used books available for 57 cents or something. I hate to say it, guys, but QRP books seem to be in demand, and we know about the soaring prices on experimental methods for RF design. There are rumors that certain individuals are using these in lieu of more traditional retirement investment vehicles. I urge you not to do this. Don't sell all the stocks and bonds and just buy EMRFD. It's a great book, but it was never intended as a 401k plan. It's just not it. The book that Michael A1TJ mentioned is not in the cheap category. It's out there, and the cheapest one was about $38 on Amazon. So we'll have to wait. We'll have to wait till that one comes back. Maybe it'll come back into print, and the price will come down. We'll see. Technical projects here. Now that I've finally gotten the my 20 meter double sideband transceiver and outboard linear amplifier stabilized and transmitting nicely, of course my thoughts turn to other bands, and I start thinking, what can I do next? What should I do next? What band do I really need? And in my case, the decision is driven by timing. My time in the shack is usually from about 5 a.m. till about 7 a.m. Every morning. Before work, on weekends before the kids get up. And so that's when I'm in here. So it really doesn't do me any good to have capability to operate on bands that are dead as a doornail at that hour. So I started asking around and tuning around, and just to see what's on. Who can I be? Where can I find similar fanatics who are also awake at that hour, and on the radio? And my Italian friends all suggested 40 meters. They're big fans of 40 meters, especially with sunspots low. Everybody knows that 40 is just about open just about all the time. Not only that, the Italians just got an expanded band allocation on 40. This happened in the UK a year or two ago, and it's now happened in Italy also. The upper limit of the 40 meter band used to be 7.1 megacycles. If you can imagine that, they were stuck between 7.0 and 7.1. You know, in the States, we've always gone up to 7.3. Well, the improvement now is that now they can go from 7.0 to 7.2, you know, a doubling of the available frequencies on 40, which is it's a big deal. It's a big improvement. But you know, I tune around those new frequencies and the old frequencies on 40 meters at that hour, and there's just not a lot of chatter. Whereas if I go to 80, even at 5:30 a.m., there are locals, Italians on, and actually they sound like quite good kind of technical CUSOs underway at that hour. There may be some correlation between technical wizardry and insomnia. I don't know, but they're the kind of CUSOs that if you're a Solder Smoke fan, you'd want to get into. And so the decision's been made. It's going to be the next band to conquer here is 80 meters. And what I've done is I've taken a double sideband transmitter that I built for 40 meters while in London, and now I'm in the process of converting it for use on 80. The first step was just to change the VFO frequency. And I just did some back of the envelope calculations on what changes would need to be made to the coils and caps in the VFO. It was a very satisfying kind of quick change, because then I just turned to the workbench, plucked out one coil, popped in another, tuned around, and as I was listening to 80 meters on my Drake 2B, all of a sudden I hear that whoop. There it is. It doesn't often work that way. Usually it takes you a lot longer to get the thing in the right place and stabilized and everything else. But this thing came together really quickly, and it wasn't any kind of major surgery involved there. And so now I have the oscillator going from about 3.55 up to about 3.75, which is just where I want it. And the balance modulator is is balanced modulating. And now it just becomes, wow, this is where it gets. Now you notice how I said it. Now it just becomes a matter of the RF power amplifier. Oh man, I've said that before, and it turned out to be not so simple. But as I told Michael AA1TJ, this time I am determined to follow a different sequence. This time it's going to be design first, build later, instead of, well, the reverse, which has been build something and then go back and then focus on the design aspects. No, I have read experimental methods for RF design, and I know that the sequence should be design, build, not the reverse. So I'm avoiding the temptation to just pull out the soldering iron and start kludging something together. It's going to be start out with actual pieces of paper, pencils, LT spice, that kind of thing. I'll keep you guys posted on progress. I think you guys are probably do the same thing. I try never to leave the house on a kind of a family trip or a shopping mission or anything else like that without at least two or three copies of Sprat in my pocket. You never know. You're always going to have that 20 or 30 minute wait outside the shoe store. Shoe stores. It seems like I'm often stuck out in front of shoe stores, and it could be bad if you don't have something to read. Sprat's perfect. Sprat fits in the pocket just nicely. And anyway, on the last few outings, I've been taking Sprat with me. One of the great things is even on really old issues of Sprat, you're flipping through the pages, and all of a sudden you come across a friend. Well, you come across friends all the time, but friends that you don't normally expect to find in there. And I had with me on a recent shopping expedition, I think an issue of Sprat from about 1983, and I turned over the page, and there was a really great article from our friend Wes, W7ZOI, on a transceiver that he called the snowshoe transceiver, obviously built for use in the great mountains of the West, and interesting circuit, great article. And I really like the way they do the diagrams. It's got a really kind of beautiful artistic element to it. So it was great to find that. And then let me see if I have it here. Yeah. Here's another one. This is the kind of thing that happens when you carry around with you old issues of Sprat. This one's not that old. This one is from winter 2003-2004. And I go to the column by Dick Pasco, G0BPS, SSB and Data Report. And always interesting articles about what guys are doing with phone and everything else. And then I see this one here. It kind of caught my eye. Paddy, VU2PEP, worked Mike Whiskey Zero Uniform Sierra Kilo, getting a report of 5.7 from him. The equipment was a simple homebrew QRP HF transceiver running 4 watts into a homebrew 2-element Yagi. Check out the rig at http://farhan.net.co.nr transceiver1html. That's got to be a very early mention of the now world-famous BitX20 transceiver. And it was just kind of buried there in the SSB and Data Report column of Sprat 117. So we have QRP history all around us. Speaking of the BitX20, I stumbled across Farhan's site, and I noticed that he updated it recently, and it's really it's always been very nice, but it's even nicer now. And man, every time I look at that BitX20 circuit, I think, why am I messing around with DSB rigs when SSB is available with almost the same level of simplicity? The beauty of that circuit, that the availability of the parts. I I feel myself being pulled into the world of the BitX 20. Also, it'd be so great to just be part of this kind of worldwide community of BitX 20 builders. So stay tuned. I might be into the BitX 20 here world here soon. Saw a nice note from Michael AA1TJ. You know, we were we did a bit of a, well, not a bit of a, an April 1 issue involving Michael's Zener diode transmitter crossing the pond and being received here in central Rome. But I'm happy to report now that that Michael actually did cross the pond, not with the Zener diode rig, but with his all common base transmitter and 3-transistor Polyakov RX. He was running 1 watt on 40 meters, and he worked Echo Sierra 1 Whiskey November to cross the pond. Congratulations, Michael, and I'm glad that's not a it's not a spoof. That's for real. Let's see. Ah, this is something I mentioned on the blog, and this is also probably Michael's. This is probably Michael's fault. Beacon Madness has returned to Italy 0/November 2 Charlie Quebec Radioland. All Michael's discussions of his Zener diode beacon got me interested in beacons again. I like beacons. I've used different kinds of beacons over the years, the standard 10-meter HF CW beacon. I also used beacons with the some of the digital satellites. It was great. I would leave the thing on in the Azores, and it'd be transmitting there on 2 meters. Nobody was hearing it. All of a sudden, PCSat satellite would come overhead, or the International Space Station with a digipeater would come overhead, and man, the thing would be repeated to the entire European continent. It was great. I like beacons. When I was reading about Michael's adventures with the beacons, I decided it was time for me to move into the modern age, and I ordered a keyer from K1EL from Steve. A K1EL keyer. This had been recommended to me, and it was a good recommendation. It came in the mail very quickly, and I put the little PC board together, and it's a really neat piece of gear. I have no idea how that chip works. It's it's far beyond my ability to understand, but it does what it says it's supposed to do, and I'm not really using it as a keyer. I'm still very much in the 19th century in terms of the production of Morse code characters. I'm a straight key guy, but I wanted this thing for its beacon feature, and it's got great beacon features. It's got standard beacons. You could do high-speed CW, or you can do QRSS, the slow-speed stuff that Hans Summers and others have been talking about in Sprat. Anyway, right now I'm just using it for 10 meters, and I pulled out my old 10-meter little slugger transmitter. This is from one of Doug DeMaw's books. I think it's from QRP Notebook. He's got a circuit in there for a transmitter for 15 or 10 that he called the Little Slugger. And I built it when I was first playing with beacons. I think it was back in Virginia. It was in 1999. So this thing's almost 10 years old. And I used to generate the Morse code by hooking the thing up to my old 486 computer, which was a bit of overkill. The K1EL beaker now does exactly the same. Actually, it does it a lot better, and it's only on a little kind of 1-inch by 1-inch PC board. So now I'm developing what I call the beacon box, one little cabinet. It's got, right now it's got the 10-meter transmitter and the K1EL keyer in there. But I've left space in the box, and I think this is kind of cool. There's space in this little aluminum chassis box for a 30-meter QRSS transmitter, a real micropower QRSS transmitter. So I'm going to build one on a piece of PC board, and in the same box I'm going to have the K1EL keyer, the 10-meter 1-watt little slugger CW transmitter and the new 30-meter milliwatt crystal-controlled QRSS beacon transmitter. And so I'm not, obviously not going to run them 30 meters and 10 meters at the same time, but it would be really neat to be able to just throw some switches and move from standard 10-meter CW beacon work to QRSS and using the same K1EL keyer. So that's the other project here that we've been working with. Let's see here. Let me just check. Oh man, I've been rambling on. Oh yeah. Let me on the beacon subject here. It was really kind of funny when the keyer came in. Like I said, it went together perfectly. The manual is really great. No problems at all. It does exactly what it says it's going to do. I really recommend it. But then I realized that I don't have any paddles, and you need one of the beauties of the K1EL keyer is that you could just do all the inputs with Morse, but you need paddles, and I don't have any paddles. I'm a straight key guy, so quick I had to build myself a paddle, and you know I've always seen discussions of using a blade from a hacksaw. You could turn it into a little kind of, you know, one push it one way for dots, push it one way for dashes. So I went down to the little art supply store that we have here close to the house, and I bought some kind of thick, heavy, it's not quite balsa wood, it's thicker and stronger than that. It's available in the art supply shops, and I found it's a pretty good construction material if you need to build something like this very quickly. So with some balsa wood, some Gorilla Glue, the hacksaw blade, some bits and pieces from the junk box, I threw together a little, what they used to call a cootie keyer, or a side swiper. And then I used that to, I'll get a picture of this thing up on the blog, I promise. It may take a while, but it'll be up there. Anyway, okay, after I do this, I'm faced with the need to actually use this new and exciting keyer device. You guys, if you've ever never used a side swiper, if you spent the last 30 years going up and down with a straight key, the transition is not easy. This is, again, I mean, this is an operator issue. It's not a hardware or software issue. The hardware and software in the K1EL keyer is perfect. It's just, this is what we used to call in the I guess in the Army, operator headspace and timing. it took me a while to figure out how to get the to send Morse sideways, and after a little bit of on-the-job training, I got it going, and so I was able to input my little message. And let me see if I can get it fired up here. This should be fun. Hold on, let me just turn the thing on. One second. I don't know if you can hear that. Kind of faint. Hold on. Well, you get the idea. There it is, clicking away. Just a couple throws of a switch. Let me see. There we go. Anyway, it's fun. And I kind of like the idea that I'm transmitting automatically, sending out waves, and I'm asking for reports to be sent via email. That'd be fun. It'd be great to come home and find the mailbox filled with reports from exotic locations. All right, let's see. That brings us to... Man, I hope that wasn't too loud. I'll have to work on the limiting there. Sorry, Smoke Mailbag. We've got a lot of mail this week. Nigel, M0NDE, our friend down there in Dover. He's been on the Dover-Calais run for work, and he brings along old back issues of Solder Smoke and listens to them on the train going under the channel. Fine business, and good to hear from you, Nigel. Got a nice... supportive note from somebody well known to the solder smoke community. With a he's got a nickname that's very much related to solder smoke. This is from Steve Snort Rosin Smith, WV6NTL. Yeah, you know, keep snorting the snot, keep snorting the rosin there, Steve. I guess. Although, well, you might want to run the fan there in the shack to get rid of the rosin smoke and the solder smoke. Thanks for the note, Steve. We got a nice note from Johan ZS1I in Mosul Bay, South Africa. He is helping to spread the word about solder smoke in South Africa. He points out that tragically, many victims of the knack there do not know about their condition, and they don't know how to treat it. Johan is alerting them to the fact that as we know, there is no cure, but home brewing and solder smoke can help with the symptoms. So thanks, Johan, and please continue your good work in spreading the word about available treatment in South Africa. Jerry, NR5A, our man in South Dakota, is now building a BidX20 Manhattan style. Obviously, he's been affected by this BidX20 talk in much the same way that I have. He also is the guy who formed the Solder Smoke SETI team. This is the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. You can form teams on the software system that allows for collaboration with the SETI project. There's now a Solder Smoke team, and four people have actually joined the team. So good for you, Jerry. Thanks for that. Jerry's also producing and selling little solder pads for Manhattan-style construction and was kind enough to send me a bag. Jerry, I'm already using them. Thanks very much, and good luck with that. Anybody's interested in that, contact Jerry in NR5A. Got a real nice note from a radio amateur in the UK. His name is Darren, 2-Echo-1, Bravo Victor X-Ray, and now Mike Zero. I think it's Bravo Victor X-Ray. It might be Bravo Uniform X-Ray. My handwriting is a little off, but his second call, more recently acquired, is Mike Zero, Echo Juliet. And Darren sent a really nice note, and he said that he enjoys listening to Solder Smoke because it gives him the feeling of being among friends. And well, you certainly are, Darren. And thanks for sending in that very very nice note. Keep listening, and let us know if there's anything we can do to help you, Darren. Jack, here's an interesting one. Jack, recently of Dhaka, currently of Brussels, Jack ON9CSV. Jack is got a kind of a lifestyle and job similar to mine. He moves around a lot, and he reports he's going back to the Mike AA1TJ's broadcasts of the Zener diode, the Zener diode transmissions that were reportedly heard here in Rome. Jack up in Brussels reports that he heard them also. Not only did he hear Mike's original Zener diode transmissions, but using what he calls advanced meditative techniques, AMTs, advanced meditative techniques, Jack, ON9CSV, reports also hearing long-delayed echoes from Alpha Alpha 1 TJ's Zener diode transmissions. Amazing. All the way in Brussels. Not only is he hearing the originals, but he's hearing long-delayed echoes on these transmissions, and he believes that one was possibly Moon Bounce. It's just amazing. This was, of course, the 1 April beacon transmissions from AA1TJ. Jack, thanks for the report, and good luck with the continued use of the advanced meditative techniques. This may be something that ends up in an April QST edition. thanks, Jack. We've been getting some really nice email from a fellow American radio amateur who's now living and working in Japan. Jonathan, 7J1 Alpha Whiskey Lima in Chiba, Japan. And he sends reports about what it's like to visit some of the great radio markets there. And he is listening to us on an MP3 player that he found in the street. I guess we could call that a roadkill MP3. And he's got some great pictures up on Flickr of bits and pieces of technology that he's picked up and found. And keep up the good work there, Jonathan, and keep sending reports from Japan. I see there's a big red dot over Chiba, so we know that you've been tuning in. Thanks a lot. And finally, we have an email from Rick, KC0PET. He BlackBerried in some 7.3s from Weeblow, Missouri. Thanks very much for that, Rick. And that concludes this week's episode of Solder Smoke Mailbag. We now have something really special this week. And let me see where I got it here. This is our annual report on 4 days in May. Dayton is behind us. Everybody is back from Dayton, and it seems like everybody had a great time. And our correspondent, Bob Crane, W8SX, was on the job once again in Dayton covering the 4 days in May event for Solder Smoke listeners. Most of us couldn't be there, but thanks to the good work of Bob, we're going to be able to now hear from the main speakers at the FDIM event. Bob, thanks very much for your hard work in doing this, and thanks for all the folks who agreed to be interviewed. And we'll put the interviews on now. And I'm sure you're all going to enjoy them. I certainly enjoyed listening to them. Made me almost feel like I was there in Dayton. We'll start now, and we'll put them on in sequence. All the interviews that Bob did for us. Here we go.
Hello, this is George Dobbs, GCRJV. I'm speaking to you from 4 days in May. We've had an excellent seminar. Yesterday we had all the speakers. I changed my tack a little in that I spoke, for want of a better word, about the soulful side of our hobby. Because I've always thought that actually QRP is quite a soulful thing that we do. We feed our souls as well as we make our radios or use our Morse keys. And strangely enough, I've had, scores of people really have come to see me during the course of the day to say that they enjoyed it. It was different, and no one has spoken quite in that way in the past, and I've had a lot of questions. I might even try it again.
Hi, my name's David Stockton. Call sign is GM4ZNX, and I was on at the 4 days in May today as the last presentation in the day, doing a technical question and answer session. It's supposed to have lasted about an hour, and it only ran on for about an extra half hour. Sometimes these can run on for an extra 2 or 3 hours. Had a lot of fun. Met an awful lot of people. The general standard of welcome is very, very warm indeed. First time I've been to Dayton. Dick Pascoe spent 15, 17 years, something like that, twisting my arm behind my back and trying to persuade me to make it over here, and it finally worked. I think I'll probably be over again, but not necessarily every year. But I'm having a great time. The main problem I see it is the difficulties with flights, security and that for getting back to Britain, because when I go over to the Hara Stadium on Saturday, I'm likely to want to buy so many things that I've got no way of getting back home. Or if I did, the duty on them would be punitive out of the customs. So it's going to be a frustrating day on Saturday, I can feel this. But you've got to go and have a look. Your curiosity doesn't give you any other choice.
I can talk in Italian?
Absolutely, I want you to.
Oh!
Can you talk in right in?
Oh, yes. Bene, Bill, mi fa molto piacere di poter di questo incontro, sia pure solo verbale, e fra Roma e Brescia non c'è una grande distanza, io spero che tu possa un giorno arrivare a Brescia. Abbiamo buon vino, buoni salami e grande amicizia. Ciao Bill.
I'm Jim Everly, K-8-I-K-E, and this is, gosh, what date is it anyway? We're in 4 days in May in Dayton, Ohio. This is the Saturday of the Ham Fest, and with my colleague, Jay Slough, K-4-Z-L-E, we put together a presentation for the forum on the designing of a broadband amplifier. It was, in a sense, the insatiable quest for the QRP gallon. And we used a 2SC1945 transistor and put the kit together so that it would be very educational and actually a follow-on to last year's build-a-thon where they did an SP1. So the presentation went well, and then we followed it on Friday with build-a-thon. We had it set so that three different stages, they would come up and sort of a test as you go. Turned out, what we were really surprised, we had a young chap, I don't know his call, but he's on the front cover of CQ magazine. He participated, and he's 12 years old. And we had three or four young women who had apparently had just gotten into ham radio and never soldered. It turns out their soldering turned out to be some of the best I've ever seen. So had about 25, actually we had a full 25 participants. We got out on time, we maybe ran 15 minutes over. And it turns out every one of the amplifiers worked. I think we got a maximum of about 14.2, 14.3 watts. So it was a very successful event. And then I spent today pretty much just working my way through the flea market and searching for other goodies that I could use in my own basement laboratory. And so I've ended up here at the evening. I guess I'm going to call this the Hamvention Weekend. We're having a banquet here at 4 days in May.
Great. And you chose a BJT instead of a MOSFET.
Yeah, actually, yes, because, well, a lot of the QRP rigs actually have BJTs in them. And we went through all the technical considerations. And it turns out infinite VSWR was probably one of the biggest considerations, certainly being able to handle about 14 watts was nice. And let's see, I don't know, we finally came down to it, and I talked with Jay, and we said we just wanted to do one, so it was kind of, we gave a slide on that, and you know, you kind of like make up all the arguments based on what you wanted to do. But it turned out it was the right choice, very rugged. Certainly during the preliminary testing, we had some cases where if it had been anything other than a true RF transistor, we would have lost it, so we were very, very pleased with that one. So 2SC1945, they're getting a little scarce, but they were still available through RF parts, and it's less than $6, so it for 14 watts is pretty nice. And that's driven with about 250 milliwatts, so it's about 14, 15 dB a gain.
Marvelous.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I'm going to go back and join the party, and nice chatting with you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Bob.
I'm Phil Harmon. I'm VK6APH. My QDH is in Perth in Western Australia, and I've come over to 4 days in May to talk about software-defined radios, and in particular one aspect of software-defined radios, and that is the phasing system that's been used in phasing transmitters and receivers since the early days of SSB. I talked about the problems of the early phasing rigs, and that was to maintain the amplitude and phase of the two signals, which we need to remove the unwanted frequency response from the receiver or unwanted sideband, and that was called the I and the Q signal. And I explained how you needed to keep the amplitude within fractions of a dB, and also the phase between the I and Q signals to very, very high accuracies of 90 degrees, otherwise you degraded the performance. And I explained in the early days of sideband how we could homebrew these radios, but the performance was never quite as good as the first generation of crystal filter radios. Once the crystal filter came along, the phasing rig really disappeared into the enthusiast's hands. But what's happened over the last few years is now we're able to take our signals and digitize them and process our I and Q signals digitally. We can achieve the ultimate performance that we couldn't do with the analog components back in the very early days of SSB.
Marvelous. Are you having a good time here?
I'm having a great time. It's the first time at 4 days in May, and it's great to be able to present to people who actually build things and like to get their hands dirty like I do and have a real love of construction and you know, just playing around with radios.
Marvelous.
Hi, my name is Mike Bryce. My call is WB8 Victor Golf Echo. I've been licensed since 1975, and since 1978, my house and just about everything else I operate has been operated on solar energy and battery backup. The station consists of a 2.5 kilowatt peak of a solar array into a 48-volt nominal battery bank consisting of 8 Trojan L16 batteries, which then goes into a trace sine wave 4048 DC to AC inverter. The system runs my house, and it utilizes almost every piece of equipment in the house. Besides the smaller batteries, I have systems that operate smaller QRP radios, of course, and 2-meter radios, and of course, all that's portable. We also operate solar power camping, and when we go off-roading, we usually take some kind of a battery backup system.
And your favorite is lead acid?
Lead acid, yes, because it's cheap, it's recyclable, and it's very, very durable. The lead acid, although it does not have the energy density of lithium ion polymers or nickel metal hydride, it's very durable. It's an old friend. It's been around since the 1800s. We'll continually use lead acid batteries into the future. They're continually improving, and battery manufacturers are working to get more density into a given package at any given time.
Okay. Are you having a good time here at...
I'm having a grand old time. I can't think of a better group of individuals to be associated with. Anybody can buy an amateur radio, get your Visa card out, buy an ICOM, throw an antenna up that you bought pre-assembled. Anybody can do that. But be able to sit there and take the same group of people who operate a watt in the middle of nowhere with an antenna made out of MacGyver parts just absolutely amazes me. And I am so proud to be part of that association. That's the QRP, Low Power Amateur Radio Operator.
Marvelous. We're all having a good time.
Yes, we are.
All right, fantastic, great. Sounds like a wonderful event, and I'm sure a good time was had by all. That, folks, that brings us to the end of this issue 84 of Solder Smoke. Keep those cards, letters, and especially emails coming in. Please do try to check out the Solder Smoke blog. SolderSmoke at soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Real easy to find. Try to subscribe. Let us know if you have any problems subscribing, and I'll try to keep posting stuff up there every day or every other day. Thanks for listening. Have a great Memorial Day weekend, and a good summer coming up. We'll continue to put out Solder Smoke through most of the summer. I don't think we're going to have to take too much of a break. Maybe a bit in August, but anyway. 7-3 from Rome.